Welcome everyone to Creating the Future's Integrity Team meeting, September 2024. I am Hilde Gottlieb with Creating the Future, and it is just exciting to have everybody with us today. If you are watching this via the blog post, please go to Twitter or X, use the hashtag Creating the Future. And if you don't use that hashtag, we will not see it. All we're going to be watching for is the hashtag Creating the Future today. This will be hopefully the last time we're using Twitter. We are hoping to migrate over to, so that folks who are watching can watch via YouTube and comment via YouTube. And we're going to be working on getting all the machinations in place so that hopefully we can walk away and say goodbye to Twitter, which will be just a delightful, delightful thing. It has become just a wretched place to be. It is delightful to have all of you here today. It has been, I've missed all your faces. So if we can go around and to folks who are new to us, Jessica and Nora, I know you have been with us before. We start everything by sharing who you are, where you are, whose ancestral lands you are sitting on, and then something that's been meaningful in your life since we last got together. And whoever wants to jump in and say hello.
Good morning. I'm John Epps. I am in this area of Highland, California, where unfortunately we are having some serious fire issues. I'm on the land of the Yamabá tribe in Southern California. And since the last time I saw you all, I actually was rehired to teach at UCR Extension, where I taught for 19 years and retired 5 years ago. So that's been my strangely exciting moment. Thank you.
What will you be teaching?
Nonprofit management.
Awesome. Awesome. You and Angie need to get together.
I have a textbook for you to look
Let's connect, Angie. Thank you so much. Thank you.
And I want to especially welcome, this is John's first official meeting as a board member. And so welcome, John. It is so delightful to have you. This is a treat. This is a treat, and I have been thinking of you with the fires. I hope y'all are safe, and I'm sure it's smoky right now. And yeah. Oh boy, glad you're here. Who's next?
I'll go next, everyone. Good to see you all. Hello to everyone who I haven't sort of come across before. My name is Carl, Carl Wilding. As you can probably tell by my accent, I'm not in North America. I'm out in the United Kingdom in a city called St. Albans, which is about 20 miles north of London. So it's currently just after 6 p.m. here. So if I yawn occasionally, I'll have to apologize to you all in advance. It's almost bedtime. My awesome my older son learned to drive, which you know what I mean is a big thing, actually. You know what I mean? I live in a village and there's not much transport around here other than cars. So having someone who can taxi me occasionally is quite an awesome thing in my life at the moment.
That is awesome. Dimitri claimed a long, long time ago that the seminal day in a parent's life is when you can send your kid out to get wine. So they have to be old enough and driving, and those two together, it's like, okay,
And you trust them. I mean,
yeah, get wine for you, not for them. It's good to see you, Carl. Who wants to go next?
I'll jump in. My name's Jessica Hernandez. Jess is good. I use she, her pronouns. And I'm in Buffalo, New York, which is the traditional land, Seneca Nation. So there's actually like six different nations that were around this area and still are. And some we have some reservations nearby. And I don't know the last time you all met. So I can't really say like what's been new since the last time you all met. But I guess just what's new is NFL season started. So out here we are big Bills, Buffalo Bills fans. So that's the big news for us out here.
That's awesome. Well, I have been looking forward to you joining us, Jess. Jess and I corresponded a little bit in preparation for the meeting today, and the work that you're doing, supporting community organizing, supporting coalition building. I'm just so happy that you're with us today. So it'll be awesome to have you here. Thank you.
Thank you.
Who's up next? Go. Can't hear you. Yeah. Maybe change mics. Okie doke. That sounds good. To those who are not able to see that, Nora said that she can hear us, but it is not allowing her to access mics at this time. So we will check back in with you. And if anybody is watching and you are tweeting, please tweet and tell us who you are and what's going on in your world. Angie, how about you?
Yeah. Hi, everyone. Angie Eikenberry. I'm here in Hartford, the University of Connecticut Hartford campus, which is, I have to look this up, the land of the Eastern Pequot, the Golden Hill Paugusset, the Lenape, the Mashantucket Pequot, Mohegan, Nipmuc, and Scaticoke lands. There's a lot of people have come and gone through this area, and what's blowing my mind, and maybe what's awesome, is being in a place where everything is so close together, and we can go on the weekend to the seaside, or go hiking, or go to big cities like Boston or New York or not far away, and it's a lot different than Nebraska.
Very, very, very different. Oh, I'm so excited for you. Angie has taken a new position starting just this fall. Tell everybody because I'm proud of you.
Yeah, oh, thank you. It's directing the School of Public Policy at UConn. And yeah, it's a big school. We have classes in Hartford, Storrs, and Stanford, and many programs, a lot of stuff going on. It's really awesome.
Very exciting. Very, very exciting. Dimitri, I will mute and you can go.
Hello, everyone, and welcome. I am Dimitri Petropoulos, located in Tucson, Arizona, same place as my partner who's sitting right over there. This is the land of the Tohono O'odham and the Pasquayaki people. And I know, as you know, Angie, you were talking about all the people who have been there, all the people's been there. There's been people here for thousands of years. Tucson has 4,000 years of continuous agriculture amongst the people living here. So clearly, there have been people way before the people who are here now, but that was their home, and we are honored to be able to be here. What's been going on is we're working on some books and some other things that are coming up in the future. That's always exciting. My awesome is, and has been probably for the last year worth of meetings, is I'm a new grandparent. We have a Sunday morning call. My eldest lives in, south of Napa in a little community there, and we do a video call. And we get to see Athena and now Nico, who is a couple of months old. But Athena is old enough now that we can interact with her. And that is totally amazing, totally awesome. She runs around and shows us stuff, and she pokes around on the iPad. She loves becoming a T-Rex, and she growls at us as that. And it's just It's just charming and amazing and perfect for a grandparent because we can just get her all riled up and then bye. We'll see you later.
Yeah, it was pretty fun yesterday. She was playing hide and seek with us, and the only way to play hide and seek is that if we're hiding, then she has to shove the iPad in a closet, and then we have to figure out. I don't know. I too am in Tucson, Arizona. Dimitri's right there. He's not really in the mountains, which is the unceded lands of the Tonawatam and the Pasquayaki people. And this is the time of year traditionally where the saguaro harvest is pretty much over, and everyone is still harvesting prickly pear. Folks look at the desert and they just see it's beautiful. This is a green desert. If you've not been here, this is a what they sometimes call a tropical desert. You look out from the mountains and all you see is green, but it is a desert. And you don't realize how much food is actually here. And so looking around and looking at all the prickly pears that are bright red fruit about this big, it's a pretty amazing time. My awesomes, what has been meaningful since we were last together, which was June, is that I've been writing all summer long. I am now diving back in, trying to figure out what exactly do I do. That transition from sabbatical to yeah, those of you who've done this, I know you guys know this is like I don't know what day it is. There was a week last week where on Monday, it wasn't even Labor Day week, it was before that, so I didn't even have that as an excuse. On Monday, I was convinced that it was either Thursday or Friday, and I was so confused. Is it Thursday or Friday? And it was neither of those. And that extended into Tuesday, and that extended into Wednesday. And then by Thursday, I could easily be confused. Is it Thursday or Friday? The writing went really well. I am about halfway done with the first rough draft of the book, which is really exciting. I am also acknowledging to myself that without having that wonderful time to just focus, it's probably going to take me a year to finish the book. And pardon me, to get it into real form, not just a rough draft, but to get it into a form where we can actually send it out to peer review to see, does it make sense? Is it in English? And during that time, we also had the weirdness. Some of you know that years ago I wrote a book called Friendraising, and it was 100 different community engagement strategies that we had not really learned. We had practiced, invented in some cases, created while we were running the diaper bank way, way back in the early 2000s. And it was written in 2005. We updated it in 2014 because it said things like, if you're being interviewed by your local TV station, make sure to bring a VHS tape along. So we decided to get rid of, we updated that in 2014. The weirdness of how the world works, right when I was supposed to start working on the book, we were wondering why is it that suddenly over the past several months, zero books are selling at Amazon. And we've never sold tons of books. In the early days, we sold a lot of the books, but it's an older book. Why is zero books selling? And so we went in and we said, all right, maybe we need to start promoting it. And so let's go to Amazon and see how were we promoting it, so maybe we can promote it elsewhere. And found that Amazon had the book. They still do. They have the book on their site, but there's no buy button. You can't buy it. And Dimitri went back and forth for 4 days between the printer who works with Amazon and Amazon, and nobody would. And we finally realized that it was easier to just update the book and post a new book than to try and get Amazon to figure out you couldn't buy it. The reason it wasn't selling is you couldn't buy it. So I spent the first couple of weeks of my sabbatical when I was supposed to be writing the next book, working on updating the last book. So it was a delight. I will say that having the time to just focus on that was such a dream. To be able to just spread out on the dining room table and just work on it 12 hours a day, not thinking about, do I have a meeting today? Do I need to jump into the shower? Or can I do this in my pajamas? That was really, really a gift. But I did miss you all, so it's nice having everybody back together again. We are going to be
Can I
talking.
just check LD, LD?
Oh, yay!
Can you hear me?
Come talk to us, Nora. Oh, awesome.
Sorry, I didn't mean to. I just wanted to check that.
No, I'm so glad.
Okay. Hi, everybody. I'm Nora Kennedy. I am in Ontario, Canada, on the lands of the Mississaugas of the Credit. And when I have that little introduction, I also like to reflect that the land that I currently, well, that I live on has been in my family now. My children are the fourth generation to walk on this land. So part of what I hold dear, when I'm thinking of a land acknowledgement is what I feel is my obligation to steward and to care for the land that I am on for future generations as well. And my awesome is that I retired this past summer from my position as executive director of a not-for-profit that supported women fleeing violence, both as a shelter and as a counseling agency and a sexual assault center, after 17 years of being in that position. And just this morning, Hildy, I had the person I was working with hit submit. So my website is now live, and I've started my own business as a values-based leadership coaching and consultant. So if you're ever interested, vblcoaching.net, you'll find out lots more about me. But one of my commitments and the reason that I'm so invested in creating the future and love working with Hildy so much is one of my commitments to my ongoing value of contribution is that now that I'm no longer leading an organization, which I really truly based in my own personal leadership values, but the organization values, is that I want to continue supporting other emerging and evolving leaders in grounding their work in positive impact, community, and global values, so that perhaps a little bit by a little bit, one leader at a time, we can affect a little bit of a change. So that's why I love catalytic thinking and creating the future and all the work that we do here.
Oh, I'm so happy for you. This is really, really exciting. Really exciting. It opens all kinds of doors. And to be honest, we get to see more of you. So I'm just happy.
Absolutely.
Good, 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 good. What we're going to be talking about today is sort of kind of related to what we have been talking about for the past several months, which have been hiring practices. And the last time we got together, we sort of wrapped up the hiring practices of as we get into hiring, and then we started to talk about onboarding. And it felt like we had settled a whole bunch of stuff to start creating procedures and processes, which is awesome. One that is very related to that, because it's all around personnel. It's all around who is doing what and how is that getting done, is the topic of consultant referrals. We get not a lot. I'm going to say one a month, and it's been increasing since we've been talking more about putting our stuff out there, out there, out there, out there. People asking if we can facilitate. Do we have consultants on staff who can facilitate using catalytic thinking? And there's been no process so far. The process has been we think about who feels like it might be a fit, who are among our fellows, but we also know that there's folks out there who are practicing catalytic thinking, who are using catalytic thinking in their work that we don't know. And because we've never asked and said, who can we refer to, we keep going to our faculty, keep going to our fellows, keep going to the same trough, but there's no process. There's no process at all. And especially as we start thinking about the next couple of years, and to share with folks who are working, who are watching for the first time. Over the next couple of years, Creating the Future has a 10-year mission. And that mission is up, that 10 years is up at the end of 2026. And our goal for the next couple of years is to set up and establish a huge resource library of all of the catalytic thinking resources that allow folks to teach it, to use it themselves. There'll be theory, there'll be case studies, there'll also be pedagogy for how we've found it works for teaching. Not this is the way, but this is a way that we have found effective in teaching. If we want folks to teach, if we want folks to consult with this, it would be helpful as folks are asking us, who can we go to have a process for that. And so today we're going to start the ball on just establishing a process of what do policies and procedures look like for consultant referrals. Who gets to be a consultant that gets referred, and et cetera, and et cetera, and et cetera. So let's start where we always start, which is the very, very first question of catalytic thinking, which is who will be affected by any policies, procedures, processes that we have, or for you, Nora, processes, and you, Carl, for consultant referrals, who will be affected by that?
Well, I'll start with the obvious, and that's, let's say, the consultants, because it is almost sort of implicit in the kickoff of this conversation that not everybody is going to be put forward as a consultant. So by definition, we are acting as a gatekeeper, and some consultants will not be able to participate, which, I mean, that's potentially a tough conversation because I suspect a direction that we could head in with this conversation is not about whether you as a consultant are a nice person, but it's about whether or not you have the knowledge, skills, and behaviors to be an effective consultant. So I'm sure we'll come to this, but we're already now opening ourselves into conversations about issues like effectiveness and so on that potentially get quite difficult in an area like this.
Yep, definitely. And if we've got the consultants, there's obviously the people who are asking us for consultants. Yeah. So for lack of a better word, potential clients, organizations. Who else?
Well, the communities that are served by those organizations.
Creating the future itself. So you, Hildy and Dimitri, because you've got people who are now going out and ostensibly reflecting again the values and the expertise and the work and everything that you have put into this for so long.
Anyone else that comes to mind? Dimitri mentioned the educational community. Talk more about that. I'll mute.
Well, we have two, maybe three teachers here. And just thinking about referring those individuals, both from the perspective of their employment, I guess, for lack of a better word, and also from the perspective of transmitting this information through their networks where they teach other consultants and they teach other students.
Yeah, absolutely. And we do also get, pardon me, we do also get requests for people who can teach a workshop. And so that's really important, Dimitri. Thank you. Yeah, which then means the students in those workshops.
It's always interesting when you have the filter or the lens of we want to propagate this information to the world. What that means when you're looking at folks who are teaching this.
So let's just start with, pardon me. Fall is always allergy time around here, and I apologize. Let's start by looking at what a referral system can make possible for each of those groups. So let's start with the consultants themselves. What can having a referral system make possible for the consultants themselves?
Well, as somebody who is doing some consulting and coaching, I would say one of the positive things that is a potential revenue generator.
What else? What does our having a process make possible for the consultants?
Again, makes clear like the expectations or what the relationship will be. Or with creating the future and with the agencies or organizations that you're working with.
I think there's also a credibility that comes with being in an association of some sort. I think it adds some gravitas to you as a provider. And also gives some confidence to the buyer, whoever's on the other end, that this isn't just some fly-by-night flaky thing that somebody threw out. So it creates a real security. It increases the confidence and security of the people who are working with.
It's like an accreditation.
Yeah, like an accreditation.
Certification.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that also gives confidence to the consultant that they know what they're doing. That they're not out because everyone, if you're out there on your own, you're kind of faking it or making it or doing whatever in the moment, but there'd be a certain level of confidence if you've gone through some sort of process to become
Oh yeah.
accredited or certified or whatever as a part of the referral process.
Yeah, Carl.
So following on from what Nora's just said then, what it potentially enables consultants to do is it saves time, it saves money because they are drawing upon a central bank of resources that have been tested. And then of course, I mean, if you have a pipeline that comes via creating the future, you're saving time and money in terms of going out and sort of doing, sorry to use the expression, customer acquisition.
I think also it gives you a network, a group of people you can connect with for sharing of those resources or getting bouncing ideas off one another and
Now you guys are clearly sparking stuff because now I'm going to a second color in my notes.
John?
Yeah. It also offers different opportunities because quite often I'm involved in things with other organizations where they will spotlight the different consultants or the different resources by having like an online summit or conference where now different people get to kind of promote the areas in which they excel. And so I think it begins to open the door for more opportunity to say, this is the right fit for you, as opposed to, one size fits all. It really begins to give you some space to customize and kind of feature And you can do things with themes like we want to talk about teams right now. We want to talk about communication right now, whatever topically you want to be able to do. So I think you begin to open the door for more perspectives on how you can apply creating the future catalytic thinking type work in different environments. And I think, that there's a tendency to when you're a hammer, everything looks like a nail. But if you get exposed to different tools, you start thinking, well, maybe I need a drill over here, and I need a screwdriver over here. And so I think it's gonna open up actually more. I think this is the one kind of good and bad thing I'm thinking about, right? Because I could see where that could become very overwhelming in some ways, because people need what people need is different across the spectrum. There's just a spectrum of need. And so
Well, and what prospective clients are going to need is going to be different across the spectrum as well. But what you're raising that's sparking for me, you and Nora, is the opportunity for ongoing education for, so you're talking summits and conferences, communities of practice, the ability to be with other people who are educating and or consulting and facilitating. Very, very specifically. I mean, we have a community of practice right now. Nora is part of it, actually. That is just folks who are, and I shouldn't say just, that is folks who are practicing catalytic thinking in whatever way. But to have one very specifically for consultants who are practicing catalytic thinking, and again, educational opportunities just for them is very, very cool. Very cool. One of the things that y'all are sparking for me, when we, and this is years ago, when we first really were an organization, 2013-ish, maybe 2014, we knew we needed to train faculty. We needed to have it can't just be the Hilde show. It had to be other people, because up to that point it was just me teaching. And so we went through faculty development, and we did meetings just like this with folks who were interested in teaching. And one of the things that came out of that, and it gets to Carl when you were talking about the fact that we're acting as gatekeepers, and that there's going to be some qualifying process. What was fascinating was thinking through the lens of inclusion rather than exclusion. Qualifying people is excluding, is us excluding. It is excluding based on criteria, but it's still excluding. And what came out of those conversations was the thought of preparation rather than qualification. And let me share what I mean by that. That we would have, and this was again for faculty development, that we would have a process that would say, in order to teach, you must take this class, you must evidence X, you must maybe get a note from clients saying that you had done that, whatever it was things that would prepare them to teach. And if they were willing to go through all of those steps to be prepared to teach, then that to us, quote unquote, qualified them. If they were, well, this is bullshit. I don't need to do this. I've been consulting for 20 years. I don't need an they self-selected out. Rather than our saying, well, if you don't want to do it, then you can't. It was a really interesting mindset shift. And so much of what you are talking about, John and Nora and Dimitri, in terms of having educational opportunities, is just really, really striking there for me. Yeah, Jess.
I appreciate you bringing that up, because I was thinking during this conversation that, like, so when I came across catalytic thinking and your website, for me, it kind of validated stuff that I was already either doing or thinking, and just went against the grain of what is currently taught or considered the way to do things. So for background, I have my MSW, my master's in social work, and I got it in a macro concentration. So I like look at, so my work has been in like taking a step back, right, from how are we organizing services, organizations, where are the what, how are we planning, implementing. And I've often like gotten frustrated with the way that things are typically done. And I obviously that's why a lot of us are here. And what I like notice in the tone of what you all are talking about, either in your conversations or also just like how this is discussed as a kind of paradigm or framework. So for me, I say all that to say that like I think a lot of people do actually kind of, this is like kind of an intuitive like thing that people are want to do. Or maybe are trying to do, but they don't have like this to back them up to say like, or they're not aware of this, right, as a framework to come from. So for those people like me who are already kind of doing this in the background already, but just don't have that legitimacy or that like part that's saying like you are actually doing something that works and makes sense and has been effective. And I think that's would be where I'd like to start. I would like to see that come out of this because people are actually already doing it. Like I think about like mutual aid, right? Mutual aid is a big like kind of it very much like lends itself well with catalytic thinking.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, questions like where have you already been putting this in practice?
And yeah, and I'm glad that you said that, LD, because I was also thinking like like I mentioned to you in our emails that I'm using this in a project and like something that we're working on. I mean it's come up in our conversations like, oh, this like it just comes from there's like a framework that discusses this, right? Like so, but it's I could also see myself, I also do consulting work, and I could see myself discussing this with clients as well in an organization, in organizations. But it can come up in different ways. I think to think about how, as when we say consultant work, like what does that look like? Because there's a lot of different ways that this could show up.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you. Dimitri.
One of the things, and Jessica, you made me think about this. One of the things that's wonderful about the catalytic thinking is it's not a process for consultants. It's not a process for nonprofits. It's a way of thinking, which means it applies to you personally, whoever you are, in your home life, in your personal life, in whatever. So the fact that you've been applying this without the framework of a class or a certification or whatever, it just means that this works for you, as I believe it works for everyone in their own lives. So it is a way of being, it's a way of thinking. So I really honor what you're saying because I think it's so true that this is something that works in so many different ways and places. This is not an engineering class or an engineering process that only works on how do you rivet a wing together. It works in pretty much anything.
Make sure I'm, yeah. Or if your Boeing had to rivet a door on.
I was
Sorry. I couldn't resist. I couldn't
I just
resist.
touched upon
But
it that
you set me up.
really.
I couldn't say no. So let's then think about what that means for the people, the consultants and coaches and workshop leaders will be teaching or facilitating. Well, you know what? No, let's stop for a second. Is anything different in what we said here for educational instructors? What can a process, if folks want to teach workshops in catalytic thinking, what can having a process for referring them, make possible for them if they are teaching workshops?
I think I'm just scrolling down my list that I've been jotting down as we've been talking, Hilti, and I think all of the things that we've brought forward are applicable for in that arena as well. Clear expectations, credibility, confidence, the network and community, the ongoing learning.
I agree with that, especially for people who might want to do this in addition to whatever their other or integrating with. But also I think about like what this makes possible for me would be to have other people collaborating on this to do this work, right? Besides just me trying to do it. So having like that group of people there to draw on, to connect to, or, you know, in the case now, like I don't have time. But I can refer the other people that I know I can have confidence will do a good job in this area.
Yeah. Go ahead, John. Go.
And another thing to me, often academia is accused of being primarily theoretical and kind of distant from the work. I just think one of the things people are requiring now is that, you know, don't just tell me about it, but help me get it done. So there's a practical application to creative thinking, to catalytic thinking, that I think helps because younger students, you know, I went back to school also, like I've lost my mind, but I went back to school and I'm working on a master's and I'm sitting in a room. And young people don't want to just know theory. They want to know, how do I apply this? How does this work in the workplace? And I think this helps bridge that thing between theory and research, where we're in academia very focused, and brings us to also application and experience. And I think that's really an important component, contribution, that's the word I want to use, Angie, right? It's a contribution we can make to the field, because we can bring us closer together. I feel like there's a gap, a chasm between sometimes education and training that really doesn't help the people in the community who need the help.
Yeah.
So I just think it helps us in closing that gap a little bit.
You're making me think about the article, Angie, that you and I are doing. Yeah, Nora.
I was also just thinking as John was speaking too, in terms of the difference when you asked about the teaching workshops or the consulting and the difference there. But I know from my own experience, I haven't officially taught a workshop in catalytic thinking, but I've run a number of processes in, you know, strategic planning and community organization in my own organization. And every time I use that process, you're also kind of teaching as you're going. So the teaching and the consulting, I'm not sure that you can actually pull them completely apart, if you know what I'm trying to say.
Very much. Very much. Yeah. Yeah. John, what I was referring to with Angie, and like I've got three thoughts in my head right now. Nora, you have been around me long enough to know that there is not a moment I'm not teaching.
Exactly.
So yeah. Yeah. Angie and I have been working on an article for a special edition of an academic journal in public administration, talking about the future of nonprofit education. And what we've been focusing on in the article is that what nonprofit education tends to exclude, maybe not entirely, but tends to really focus on the means rather than the ends. tends to focus on the how do you run an organization rather than how does that organization change the world? What you're really getting my brain going on, John, is the fact that just by incorporating catalytic thinking into a classroom, that it requires you think about the world. The case study, and Angie, you can talk about this more than me, but the case study that we've got in the article is Angie working teaching catalytic thinking in a fundraising class. So, it's not a class on how to change the world, but it's a class just on fundraising. And yet what the students got out of it was so much of, oh, this is the big picture. This is why we're doing this work, talking about equity issues, talking about inclusion issues, all of that coming up because they incorporated catalytic thinking into the class, not because it was a class on catalytic thinking. Did I do that good enough, Ms. Eikenberry?
Yeah, great job. We should like do a little like summary for the reviewer
Don't
for
even need to
reviewer
go
number
there.
two.
Don't even need to go there. Okay. One of the other things that y'all have me thinking about is that by being a part of, and it really isn't necessarily the value of having a process, but it is the value of having a network of consultants, trainers, et cetera, it makes resources available to you. Using just Angie's class as an example, we were able to pull a video here, pull a video there. The work that I'm doing currently with Columbia College, we've got this huge list of resources. It's like, oh, okay, we'll take this one for this part, we'll take this one for this part. But just that ability to and what's interesting to me is we have the resources already. And the resources could be at the site, and if you wanted to find them, you could. But to know this is a library that, once you're in that pipeline, here, take these, they're yours. There's just a different level of invitation, maybe a different level of people feeling permission. It's so interesting to me that no matter how many times we say this information, we want you to take it and we want you to use it, we want you to share it, that people come back and go, I don't know if it's okay. And it's like, please, that's why we're here. And so I think that there's something about having a resource that says, this is for you, take it.
Hildy, just to that point, and it's a slight offside, but
Good.
that was a perfect example as I was proofing my website that just went live this morning. There is on one of my services pages a piece about catalytic thinking and how I use it in my consulting. And even as I was writing that out or rereading it, there was a little voice at the back of my head going, I hope this is okay that I'm citing catalytic thinking and I haven't actually referenced, like, there's, do they have a TM that should go beside that and all of those other pieces? And I was just worried that I wasn't being, responsible or ethical about it and had to remind myself, no, Hilti says this is out there, use it. So I hope you're okay with that, but it's referenced on my website. So
We're grateful. I mean, it's so funny because everybody always asks, I hope it's okay. And we're like, we're so happy. It's like the opposite of, is it okay? It's like, yay. Yeah, it's running in the other room and going, look what we just found. So yeah. And we have intentionally not trademarked anything. We have intentionally not copyrighted. I mean, it's copyrighted. But it's copyrighted under Creative Commons that says, just give credit, just say what it is. But use it, take it, please, repeat it. Yes, sir.
in that context, the people who are in a consulting, as a consultant, you go in and you're providing a service. And there's a whole bunch of people who are there, 1, 10, 100, you may be speaking. All of them have access to this too. So it isn't just other consultants who have access or that you have access, but everybody that you're encountering is encouraged to have access to this as well. So they become their own consultant. They become their own amongst their network and their people. And I think, Hildy and I have talked about the trademark thing years ago. And I kind of came from the perspective, well, we need to protect our whatever. And Hildy quite rightfully convinced me that how does that further our
Your mission.
changing the world? How does that further our doing something that will affect the largest number of people as opposed to give us personally the greatest benefit? So I always look at it from that ripple model. Who else has access to this, and what does that mean?
Very much so. Very much so. So let's look at the other side. Let's look at the students and or consulting client. I think they're different at this point. Let's talk about the person who is sending an email to Creating the Future saying, "Do you have somebody who can facilitate a session?" What does our having a process make possible, a process for the consultants make possible for those clients who are coming to Creating the Future?
This makes it clear again what's expected.
Talk more a little bit.
Just I was thinking about, do you remember when we had the whole Arnova strategic planning discussion thing, and there's just a lot of like back and forth about that, and it would be it. Having really clarity about what's expected, the process, and so on, that, for example, I could communicate back to the board about would make it easier, they would feel more comfortable, etc.
What else? Yeah, Carl.
So I suspect that there are any number of directories and lists of consultants and associations, and all of them will have a badge on saying this person like has done these exams, or this person has done this or that or the other. And you've got to trust these things, haven't you? You mean it's the equivalent of like if you need someone to fix your roof, you look for the person that drives up in a van that's got the most number of badges on. But what none of those things do is tell you actually what are the values of this person. What none of those tell you is about what's the sort of relationship that you're going to have with them beyond just are they competent to do the job? And I think for our field, I think having someone whose values are akin to ours is as important as the knowledge and skills that they're bringing. So what we're doing, it's a different sort of assurance essentially to what you would normally get. And I that feels to me to be quite important.
Huge. Huge. Yeah.
100% agree.
Yeah.
I was going to add to say just before that, but basically the same thing, a confidence that the person that is being sent out to you is going to not only be able to deliver what you need, but do it in a manner that is aligned with you or your organization's values and philosophies and way of approaching things.
Yeah, right, fast enough. Yeah, John.
When I first started trying to put folks out to do some work for me, the two things I would tell people is one, if you're not happy, please let me know right away. And number two, and I will come and do it if necessary. So I kind of gave a guarantee, right? So it's a, and I don't know that you have to say you personally will do it, but that we as an organization will make it whole. And I think having that kind of culture, and I think that's a part of what I think we're talking about is what do we want the culture of our coaching team or our training team to look like, our consulting team to look like, and then how far do we back that culture so that you will get someone who is off color or misses the point or whatever, but that you make it clear that you'll make that whole as in a way that helps maintain integrity for the organization. Because somebody may just, they might do their very best and just miss that group, or they might actually be off key. And sometimes you just have to be prepared for how do we, how do we make our word whole?
I love that phrasing of it too. One of the things that's striking to me is, so many of you were talking about clarity around their competence, around their values, around as a prospective client, I can know ahead of time certain things. Even before I meet somebody, I can know they've been through X, they've been through Y. And what's suddenly occurring to me is whatever list we come up with of stuff that folks need to do to be prepared to teach or whatever, we just put that post-it to say this is what they had to do. We've always been so open about everything and just sharing everything openly. It occurs to me that why not share? If you're curious what it means to quote be certified, I hate the word certified, but for lack of a better, they're on the list. What did it take to get on the list? Here's all the stuff they had to either evidence or talk about or et cetera to get on the list. Rather than just they've got a check mark next to their name, or I loved the example, Carl, of having 17 different certifications on the roofer's truck. I don't know what any of them mean, but they've got a little gold seal that their kid probably drew. But really, to know what it means, there's something different about seal of approval with a check mark, and here's my registrar of contractors number. So that I know you went through the state or through the province to get certified to be, et cetera. I know that there's criteria. So, yeah, Nora.
Just going along with that, and I can't remember who brought it up, but I love the idea of that transparency. Put it out there so that confidence is there. But when we talk about again the values, why wouldn't that be up there as well? We've had to do this, this, and this, and as a part of this team that we're putting forward, you can be assured that they are coming forward. Generating or living the values that creating the future has espoused and lived throughout, so that those are right up front. And if your consultant or your teacher or whatever isn't demonstrating or living those values, well, let's have a talk about that.
You're already coming up with conditions questions in my head. I'm scribbling them down. What else? Yeah, Carl, go.
Can I just follow on Nora's point, please? Having previously run an organization where we had a list of approved consultants, one of the things that you always were worried about was being sued. Because if you are approving someone, you're saying they are of a certain quality. And if they deliver something that is not of a certain quality, then the purchaser sort of comes to you. And so on. I mean, I think the chances of that happening to us are minuscule, but I mean, just hold that thought for a minute. But if you're guaranteeing someone not on the basis that you're saying this person has done these exams and there will be a minimum standard of work, but instead what you're saying is that actually what we are guaranteeing is that this person shares our values, that's a very different conversation to the community that you're trying to support. Because to me, it's a conversation based on trust, whereas the conversation where you were certifying someone saying that they have a minimum level of skills is a conversation based on confidence. It's a contractual conversation, whereas saying that these people share our values, it's one based on shared goals and sort of shared ideals.
I love you, Carl. I love that values is about trust and skills is about transaction. There's something really big there. What else does this make possible for the folks who are sending a note saying, do you have a facilitator that can come help us?
One phone call. Ease of process. It's one reach out. I don't have to contact 15 different people to find someone. And that's huge as somebody who's hired people into my organization as well. Just having that one place to go.
How about students in workshops or in classes? What does our having a process for their instructors make possible for them? Go ahead, Carl.
So probably is the least skilled instructor on the three of us that are currently teaching in universities. I'm going to be sort of slightly outrageous now and say some university teaching in terms of pedagogy is actually not very good. And especially, like once you move beyond chalk and talk to sort of activities where you are genuinely trying to engage people and do something that's a bit different. I don't think there's a huge amount of that stuff around. So having this and sort of give people having confidence that here are things that have been tested by other educators that might be quite useful for the students. I think they might get a better type of engagement potentially.
I can go back to Carl's point about the values, et cetera, as well. Really great exposure to people who work from a certain positive impact value set, if I can put it that way, that are there for, well, in our view, the right reasons, right? Like,
Yeah, I like that idea too, because that so much of what we do in the our curriculum is like focus, especially it's public administration, nonprofit management, focusing on all the problems, right, and how to help students prepare to solve problems. I just spoke to our MPA fellows class on Saturday, and we were talking about grand challenges for public administration and nonprofits, and I talked about like just being staying hopeful, right? Keeping focused on what's possible is a really hard thing to do sometimes.
I'm going back to the what does this make possible for the teachers, the instructors, the because that's such a huge piece of it,
Same
staying
too.
hopeful.
Same.
The other thought that occurred to me around the oh God, I'm writing and thinking at the same time, and I should never do that. Around the instructors is the ability to be with other instructors and develop pedagogy. Like I said earlier, the library that we have is going to share what we've learned about teaching this, but it's such a an emerging field of teaching this, especially in a university classroom. Teaching a workshop tends to be very, very discrete. It's not over a semester. It's doing something in 3, 4 hours or a webinar for 90 minutes. But for instructors, there's something there in terms of again, we were talking before about network and community and communities of practice and stuff. There's something there about, I think there's for some instructors, they're really, really happy to just do what they always did. And every once in a while I get on a listserv that Angie and Carl are on. And I ask, how do you all choose your textbooks for upcoming semesters? And almost all of them say, I've taught the same textbook for 20 years. And so for some, that's what it's like. But for others, there is a frustration with with the pedagogy. And so it's just occurring to me that there's an opportunity there for developing new ways of looking at specifically, we need to first of all stop calling it nonprofit management, because that's about managing nonprofits rather than creating change in community. So some of the basics of what does that pedagogy look like when we're talking about really focusing folks on the means and the ends.
If I may, when throughout this conversation, I'm thinking about it, there's the aspect of learning the framework or learning how to do catalytic thinking, right? Like you were saying in the workshop or teaching this. Then there's the part of doing this with a specific project or a specific problem or challenge in mind, right? Like I'm sure from, for those of us, and Carl, I don't teach either, so you're not the only least academic person here. Yeah, I whenever the best trainings that I've been to when it was like a problem solving training was like when we did learned. So actually, out here at Buffalo State, it's a university here, college here. They created like creative thinking as like a curriculum. So there's a lot, there are people who come out of this school of thought, and they train people, I think like every year. So some of the people at my recent agency, they did that. They went through that process. And so now when we would have an issue at our organization, they would do like every now and then somebody would say, like, we're going to do a creative thinking, like problem solving day workshop where everybody are going to come in and take whatever challenge or problem you're having in your respective department program, and we're going to apply this process and we're going to just walk it through. Difference versus like teaching it as just like a thing, right? But then on top of it, we're talking about like consulting with, or this could be sometimes like organizations are kind of like rethinking like how are you going to implement this program or provide these services in a way that's like sustainable because grants or the contracts aren't there. Like I worked in refugee resettlement recently. Like that's so up and down depending on an administration, right? And I know that those agencies are trying to figure out what they're going to do now with this, an upcoming election, not knowing who's going to be president, in the upcoming year, and how do they manage this like time frame. And so there's like a lot, so I can like catalytic thinking is like a process that could be very beneficial for a lot of these agencies, right? Figuring out how do we like really work with the community. But so there's all these different ways that I could see this like applying. But I think about it from, you're saying like the client perspective or who's receiving it, but then also what are people asking for and what kind of, I know Carl, you mentioned like transactional. I'm thinking like the deliverable, like the facilitator also has to have facilitation skills or capacity, right? Or competency on top of having this, understanding this, bringing this to the table. An educator needs to know how to educate or be able to explain these on top of being able to have this like understanding. So it's like, how do you, from this, from the perspective of being receiving the referral, how do you then kind of go about that part too? Like, how do you match?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Now you've got me very curious about the Buffalo University programming creative thinking.
Yeah, I can send you some information about
I
it.
would love to see that. I would love to see that. Well, let's talk for a moment about creating the future ourselves as an organization. What does our having a process for referring workshop instructors, facilitators, consultants, what does our having a process make possible for us?
Again, I think clarity in terms of, because you've said there isn't a process, so it's a matter of just, I don't know, maybe so and so is available, or so you had, so clarity of who's on the list, who might be available. I don't know whether the whole process would involve sort of niches. Kalnora, she always does work in Ontario, Canada, or she always does not for profit, or call so and so because they do so, like, so that maybe streamlining and clarity of process. And I hate to sound, crass, but potentially a revenue stream for you, which.
I think clarifying, like, how do you create a process that is like equitable, that is organized? I respect a lot that you all think about this, right? Like you were saying, Hildy, exclusivity versus inclusivity. A lot of that comes down to, some of that, a lot of that comes down to who even knows about this, who's available, who has the resources, who is considered credible or capable. So like us, like I think also thinking through that and really applying
Oh yeah.
the values to the process as well, right?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely. Which
I'd
it
also comes
I'd
back to
also say
values.
I'd also say confidence in knowing that you're advancing your mission.
Well, there's confidence in knowing the mission, and there's confidence in the people that we refer. Yeah, which goes beyond clarity and goes to confidence. And to some degree, so I'm thinking about, wish I could write as fast as I could think. Or as fast as you guys can be brilliant is really what it comes down to. I'm trying to capture every word because some of the stuff you're saying is like word for word beautiful. Several things are popping for me. One is this: if creating the future is looking at a 10-year mission, and if we're done by the end of 26, it may take till the end of 27. Does something live on beyond us? We've talked about this, that there'll definitely be a library that lives on beyond us, and et cetera. But all of this ability to convene, we could just become sort of an automated website, whatever, that brings people together, that still has people that are helping people through the process. I'm just trying, my brain is sort of going to the eventual, which probably is just too long term at this point, because what we need is something now. So yeah, John.
I think the opposite happens, right? I think you actually want to go deeper down the rabbit hole, so to speak. You're going to add a box on the org chart called, consulting, and it's going to have its own personnel and processes and everything that goes with it. And I do think, though, it is in many ways a legacy thing. I just to use a organization I followed, John Maxwell started out writing books, and then he started to have some training. Now he's got the whole Maxwell Leadership Organization. It's global, it's doing stuff, and that's the kind of thing, scope wise. I don't know, once you open this door, Pandora's box, you could very well have this thing kind of become its own, either branch or even in some ways almost supersedes. And so I really think that's important. We've talked before about how important it is in terms of getting people who can work with you, Hildy, and also you continuing to write and do other things you would like to do in your life. So this is not going to be something that's going to take like 4 hours a week of Hildy's time. So I just think as you open this door, you'll want to bring in the right person or persons to make it work the right way, because it's just So I think as important as it's going to be when we talk about the consultants directly, I think there's also that team that's going to be required to make it function properly, because it's a different set of skills. It's a, I used to do PC support teams, right? It's going to be almost like the creating the future support team. It's gonna get a lot of those kinds of inquiries, and out of that, things will develop. I don't think that's bad. I just want to make clear it's kind of like splitting into twins, and now you're gonna have, double. What are you saying? The double mint me? Double
Double mint
your
commercials.
double your
Double my
fun,
pleasure,
double
double
your
my
pay.
fun.
There you go. You're gonna have double the pleasure and double the fun. I think it's, but I think it's also, in my mind, almost, if we're gonna leave this legacy of all of the materials and resources that we've been talking about, and we really care about what happens with that, I almost think you have to create this as a companion to kind of keep the course. Otherwise, it could just become either a real big data dump or something that you don't necessarily intend for it to become.
And we can get into the logistics as we move forward in all of it, but I do think it's something that sits in the back of my mind is that okay, and then what? And it's going to be important. It's going to be one of the important aspects as we develop it. To talk about, what is the it we're developing? And there's all kinds of options. There's always a million options. So I think it's pretty cool. What else? Dimitri.
Keying off what John, what you were just saying is that it's the, you said data dump. A data dump is not alive. I mean, it is just a thing. And what this process is, it's alive. And Hilda, you were talking about basically a feedback loop at one point. When people are learning, they're also teaching. And so this kind of goes around and around and grows as a result of that. And I'm just, again, we're not ready to be talking about and then what, but in the then what, though, I think needs to have a component of it which is always alive, which means it always has people in it, and it isn't just, click this button and you get the AI robot that comes up to you and says, instructs you or does whatever. So yeah, I think that's really important to be thinking about it in that context.
And we will definitely get there. And I think that's I just think it's really important to be thinking about. Dimitri, have you been watching Twitter? Is there anybody? There's nobody. I didn't think so.
Constantly checking.
There's been a bunch of people who said they wanted to watch, and sometimes it's difficult to watch and tweet. And we get that. We get that. And some people don't want to be on Twitter, and that includes us. We will get out of there quick, I promise. Let's start talking about we went through so the folks that we said would be affected are the consultants, the client organizations creating the future itself, the educational instructors, students in the workshops. We talked about also the people who are in the communities that those organizations serve. So somebody comes to us, asks if we've got a facilitator, and they're facilitating, but they're facilitating towards eventually, if they're using catalytic thinking, really focused on their community. Is there anything in particular that are having a process for those consultants makes possible for the communities that this will ripple out into. Yeah, Nora.
And I've seen this happen in our own community. And as you know, Hildy, both Elaine and I have been working with catalytic thinking in our community here for a while and in different workshops. And what I'm seeing happening for the community is that whether or not it is actually referred to as catalytic thinking, I'm starting to see the process show up in other places and in other processes. So that's exciting. So I think sometimes that in those situations, people don't necessarily even know. They're not leaving saying, I am going to use catalytic thinking now in everything that I do, but it's starting to change the way they think and they see things. One of the ways that I know that that's happened is because after a conversation that we had in one of our discussion somewhere along the line about succession planning and continuity planning. I have consistently been using the term continuity planning since I started working on mine, and I've picked it up on several other occasions within from other leaders in my org in my community. So I
Wow.
don't think, yeah, and I don't think we can measure that, but I think that's part of the impact.
I'm so first of all, yay. So that's we've said forever that we will know we are successful when people we've never heard of are using these questions with other people we've never heard of, which is, don't get me started on measuring impact. Trying to measure things that can't be measurable is just a fool's errand, and welcome to nonprofit life. But I think there's something big there, and I think to your point, Nora, it would be nice if the questions of catalytic thinking become the way we be in the world, and we don't have to call it something. You know, I mean, if these questions, if we were just constantly, if every conversation only started with who will be affected and what would it take for them to be part of this conversation, if it only started with that, and you didn't have to call it anything, if just that's routinely how we started every conversation is who's going to be affected? What would it take for them to either be part of this or to lead the direction that we take? Right there. If instead of constantly attacking the problem, people were asking, well, what would success look like? I was talking the other day with someone who wants to incorporate catalytic thinking into a process that they're doing in their organization. It's a pretty large organization. And their board chair said, well, I'm going to facilitate this. She was like, okay. Said, I've facilitated for 30, 40 years. I'm going to facilitate this session. She's like, okay. I wanted to talk to him about catalytic thinking, but he was like, yeah, that sounds very good, but I'm going to do it the way I've always done it. And told her, well, I think, we don't even really need a full day. We could only do this. We could do this in just a half day because we already know what the problems are that people are going to come up with. And so why don't I just list out what the problems are? And she took a deep breath and she said, what if we asked them what they thought success would look like? And he went, oh, okay. And stepped back for a moment and he went, well, it really all depends on who's at the table and who are we going to have at the table? And she said, well, maybe we can ask who's going to be affected by what we're going to do. And he went, oh. And so it's just really so per I'm like my heart just leapt out of my chest when she was telling me this. She wasn't pushing catalytic thinking. She wasn't pushing, we need to do this framework or we need to do this. It was just the power that we all have to ask a different question. And so there's just something juicy in it, just sort of riffing off of what you said, Nora, that it doesn't have to be, we're going to do catalytic thinking now. But here are the questions that we're going to ask. What else does this make possible for the communities that folks are working in? Are having a process of helping, preparing facilitators, instructors. What does that make possible for the folks in community?
Well, I think you've maybe already said this, but just that it provides the community with a process that's forward thinking, not based just on problems in the community.
A mindset shift, or a lot of places can be very like about from scare like the scarcity mindset versus abundant mindset, right? Like the one of the things that really I connected a lot with was the idea of enoughness. I think a lot of like I come from like I'm also thinking from like a community organizing small based community groups, right? Like not established 501c3s or anything like that, but there's a lot of people who do that, who do that in practice in some ways, but don't realize, again, like there's like frameworks that can support this, or that there's like a process that could support this, right? Like there's, it might be a piecemeal, but then you're also dealing with like challenging, maybe you're trying to speak to another group or somebody from an organization like an ASAP or a university, and they don't have that same perspective, and so now you're not speaking at the same level, or at this you're not having the same like language, right? So like having that ability to like from this small group where we're practicing this, we can now have the language to like to kind of shift to be able to talk to this organization in a way that's like maybe to get what we need, right? Or vice versa.
Love that. I love that. I love that. That
It's the reinventing the wheel thing. It's the every group coming to stuff, and if they don't find their peeps who can help support that, they're trying to figure it out on their own. I loved your framing of not realizing that there's a framework that can help to support the work that they're already doing. There's also something in what you all are talking about, the power in focusing consultants and re-embedding it all the time, consultants and instructors, on the focus first on community and the future, rather than organization and the present. Because the present is really just the past manifesting itself in whatever happens to be today. And there's something powerful in knowing that the consultant and the community's not going to know this, but the community will benefit from the fact that it is a consultant that is focused on community first, then organization, that is focused first on the future and then how the present feeds into that future. There's something really powerful in that.
As somebody who's been in direct service, right? Like I was case manager for a really long time. I got into consulting with an interest in how to have organizations shift to ensure that they're focusing on the services and the community that's receiving the services, because like you mentioned before, there's a strong perspective on like managing the nonprofit. Like how do we, it's very strong on like the funding and the, maintaining the donations, maintaining just maintenance of the organization. And so a lot of times the service, the community that's receiving the services, or even understanding like what does the community need, like that again, the idea of like who's affected and are they at the table, that gets lost along the way. But on top of it, a lot of times the people who are providing the direct services are themselves part of the community, like that's receiving the services, right? Like they tend to reflect the community a lot of times, not all the time, but a lot. And so there's like, how do we kind of recognize that, like that, how do we, like you said, the future, like what are we doing that is not just maintaining the organization? Because that tends to take away then from like it, there th that push it pulls us away, it pulls us apart, and it has, I think, detrimental effects.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's It's context. We do so much of our work without the context of community and humans and the context of the future. When the context becomes my favorite board quote of all time, and where's the money going to come from? And you can see from the door behind me that Dimitri really is not in the mountains. He really is next to me. I don't know if you all had seen, like 20, 30 years ago, there was a film that Robin Williams was in. It was Baron Munchausen. It was throwaway kind of movie, but it was Robin Williams' head floating in the ether, and he had some screensaver, he had some background on before where I walked into the room and all I saw was Dimitri's head floating. And I was like, oh, geez, it's Robin Williams' head floating in the ether. So, but he is really, really right here. Are there other benefits that you all see? What can this make possible? Are having a process for preparing consultants? I love preparing. For preparing consultants and instructors, are having a process. What can that make possible for the communities where those consultants will be facilitating? And if you have any other thoughts in terms of what it makes possible for the clients, for the students, and for the consultants themselves.
I just think I want to add one more thing. I think this process, what we're talking about, is more appealing to younger people than the traditional strategic planning, hardwired frameworks that a lot of us are used to. And I think that's really important. I think, as I'm sitting with people in classes, they don't really want formulaic, do step one, do step two, do step three. They really want to kind of think about the solutions, et cetera. So I think it kind of extends our impact in a broader, across more generations, I guess is the way I like to put it. You know, I think it will help. And I'm really old. Tomorrow will be my birthday, so I'll be really old there then. And so I know it still appeals to me, but I know there are a lot of people my age who don't want anything appealing and new, and this is more fresh. So.
You just opened up. My brain just went like this. And happy birthday. There's a.
Can I add one more? Oh, sorry. You
No,
go.
go, come.
Thinking about first of all, I'm really old too, and it still really appeals to me. So, solidarity. When talking about what else benefits the community, and I'm going back to thinking, I just wrote that down, Hilde, because quite often you say things that I have to write down and find ways of using in other places and pretend they're my own. But the focus on community first and then on the organization. And having just left a very long career in not-for-profit, heading up organizations, one of the things I've always railed against from the funding perspective is that we are pitted against one another because of the funding structure, right? So we're all out competing for the same fundraising dollars for the same grant. And until that structure is taken away, we're always going to be in that competition, which is not conducive to an integrated community. So at all. So one of the things I was thinking is that in terms of the community piece is that by having consultants or trainers or whatever you want to what we call them out doing the work in the community, advocating for that sense of community first and then organization, that perhaps it can help insidiously kind of shift a little of that thinking from organization first and then community to flip that piece. I know in Canada, or in Ontario at least, we have what is called Ontario health teams that were brought in, and we're supposed to be all about integrating community. And in our community, at least, it hasn't been successful because it still comes down to the dollar. So if there's more funding, who's going to get it, and what do you have to do to get that funding, regardless of, quite honestly, whether it could be better off serving the community somewhere else, you still have to go after it. So just thinking that this might be a way of trying to push that forward just a little bit.
I'm excited. The word that many people have used about catalytic thinking, the more you get into it and the more that you play with the questions, is it's subversive. It really seems so innocuous. These are just such gentle questions. And yet, you just asking that first question of who will be affected and what does it take for them to be in the room? Often, who will be affected is your quote unquote competing organizations. So, if we're talking about domestic violence and there's six domestic violence organizations in a city of 10 million people, then who will be affected by whatever we're going to do or what we're thinking about is going to be all those other DV organizations. Oh, okay. What does it take to include them? Oh, okay. Now you're making me talk to them?
Yeah.
There, I think that's just huge, Nora, because it is, a consultant asking that question, just innocently asking that question, who will be affected, and innocently dropping in, well, what about the other domestic violence organization? Oh, yeah. Will this affect them? Oh, yeah. Will it affect everybody's ability to make a difference? Oh, yeah. I love that. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. And John, you've really got me thinking about there's a combination of two things going on generationally. One is, and I find this isn't necessarily quote about older people, but about people who get stuck in their ways, or this is how I do it. And I've met 30-year-olds like that. This is how you do it. This is how you do it. I've also seen people come out of nonprofit management degrees because they've gone to college and in some cases gone into debt to learn the this is how you do it. And this confronts that where you're told this is not how you do it. So there's people who are stuck in their ways. There's also a generational shift in how people are thinking and how younger people are thinking. So part of it has to do with age, and part of it has to do with just mentally being stuck. And as we get into talking about the conditions for success, which we'll talk about next time, really thinking about the continuum of potential. And for those of you who are not familiar with the continuum of potential, Nora, I'm going to teach. I'll do 2 minutes on the continuum. What we realized a long time ago was that, so this came from the very early days. This is like 15 years ago when we first started teaching this, and we weren't even calling it catalytic thinking at that time. Dimitri and I were teaching our consulting friends in 2009. There was no creating the future. And what all of those consultants wanted to know is, what do you do with groups who aren't ready for this? And the readiness question used to make me a little crazy, because there's a judgment in there that you're not ready for what I think you should be ready for. And if somebody is calling a consultant, they're clearly ready for something. And so I started looking into systems of behavioral change. Just started reading a lot about neuroscience and behavioral psychology, and found that there are many theories around continuums of, or continua of behavioral change, that people don't just change instantly, that they make micro changes along the way. And so what fast forwarding, what we developed is what we call the continuum of potential, which acknowledges that everyone is at a different stage in reaching for their potential about a certain thing. So it's not that Dimitri's in the X stage of potential. No. When it comes to getting ready for something that he wants to do, he's in X stage. And when it comes to something he doesn't want to do, he's in X stage. When it comes to losing weight, I'm in this stage. When it comes to developing a book for catalytic thinking, I'm in this stage. So it's about a specific behavioral change. And what's occurring to me is that there's going to be, as we think about the conditions for success, the folks who are going to be consultants are probably going to want to be at a certain stage in their thinking about how they are thinking about making change. And so it just something more to play with. And if you're interested, I will share with you all more information about it. Jessica, with your MSW, you're probably already sparking.
I was like, yeah, I was like, I can't remember if it's theory of change or whatever, but I'm thinking, remembering there's a wheel of like where people are at and their stages of change. And
there's a great book by a clinical psychologist by the name of James Prochaska. That I don't remember what it's called. It might be Stages of Change. I don't remember. He did some studies in the 90s. He was hired by the state of California to determine why smoking cessation programs worked for some and didn't work for others.
Yeah.
And what they found is that people are at different stages of readiness to change, and that if they have not gone through that cognitive, all of those different stages, they have a heart attack, they wind up in the ER, they promise Jesus that they're going to quit smoking, and 2 weeks later they've stopped because they have not done all of the mental preparation to get there. And so it's fascinating, and I'll send it to you all.
I think it was changing.
Changing for good. Thank you, Dimitri.
Something else I also think about with this is relational work, because even as we were talking about, like, with whether it's organizations or organization to organization or just groups and entities, this is something that has actually been coming up a lot with the project that I'm working on, is like this all comes down to relationships, and a lot of times it's the people in the organization, right, or an institution that are as interested in building out these relationships or building out these partnerships. And then a lot of times that if when that person leaves or something happens, that can break down. But there's, or also there's like, like we were saying, there's the competition or maybe the political stuff that goes on, or just like people being people and like having like tension or conflict with each other. So there is a need to like address the relational aspect, and how are people like able to build relationships that are like, that are mission, that at least are mission driven, or an agreement to work with each other, ability to work through challenges or conflicts, disagreements. Like that's one of the hardest parts around coalition building, really, right? So I do think that the relational piece is something that has to be figured out through this as well.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And I hate to say this, but we are 15 minutes out in time. It's been a great conversation. I'm going to ask all of us to take a deep breath. As our dear friend Jackie Bradley has made us aware, that it's the breath that we take when we're stepping into a warm bath. Just get that nice exhale. If you've taken any notes and want to look through your notes and see what is standing out to you, circle anything that is standing out to you, and let's share some reflections on the conversation.
If I may make my reflection, and then I have to pop off Hildy, because I have a client call at 3 o'clock, but a couple of things. Just thank you, first of all, so much for inviting me to participate in this conversation. It was really wonderful and quite exciting seeing how things are moving forward. So a couple of things stood out for me, again, around the consultant piece, the value. We can never underestimate the value of the community piece, the networking, the community, the connection. I think comes up every single time we have any kind of conversation around the what the advantages are. So I think that's something that we all crave. And I loved the piece, coming from my background as well, around the offering of not just the expertise, kind of concrete hard skills level, but the fact that anybody who is going forward to do work on behalf of or in conjunction with, however you phrase that, creating the future will be representing a similar set of values and thinking and approach. So
Okay.
those were my two sort of reflections.
Thank you, and thank you for being with us today.
Thank you.
All right, I'm going to pop off now, but lovely to see everybody. Thank you for the conversation.
Thank you.
Bye.
Who else? What's standing out to y'all? Yeah, Carl.
Angie and I share a colleague who I work with called Beth. And she wrote a book about a year ago about philanthropy advisors. And I'm pretty sure that one of the main messages in that book was that basically a lot of the time, the thing that philanthropy advisors don't get right is they don't spend enough time trying to understand what people's values are and what's meaningful to them and so on. They had all the financial advice skills and all that sort of stuff. They can do all that, but they didn't always have that other stuff that then actually connects with people and then turns them into donors, I guess is the point. And I was just thinking about that now, and it's a bit like the conversation we've had tonight is, yes, all the skills and stuff are important, but every time we've talked about creating the future in the past and why we're distinctive and what we want to make sure that we hold all through the changes that we go through, they've always been conversations about values and maintaining that. So it seems to me that what comes out of the conversation tonight is that, first of all, I mean, this is a means by which we can sort of give people confidence that the people that they want to help them share their values. But actually, when you were talking about what does it mean for us, I think the takeaway from me for tonight is that this is also a means of us ensuring that our values continue.
Yeah. Thank you.
Who else?
I'll jump in and one sort of thought or observation I had related to this discussion is that doing this sort of what we've been talking about today just adds transparency to relationships, which I am finding if there's not that transparency or people on different sides of the relationships have different ideas about what it's supposed to be, having like that clarity can or will hopefully lead to people kind of working in the same direction, right, and ground their shared values and so on. So I think that this is, yeah, good that we're doing that.
Yeah. Who else?
Well, this being my first time in this like live, it was definitely like interest like it was really interesting way to like have a meeting or conversation that's like having Hildy as the facilitator of this discussion with the questions, but then so like being neurodivergent, right? Like I'm very used to like going off onto tangents, and like the group that I'm working with, we're all neurodivergent, and it's like we go off and then we come back and we go off and then we come back, and it's interesting to be in a space where it's like that's like the expectation kind of is like we can ask the question. We're permitted to kind of go in these different realms, but then we're coming back around and yeah, to have that kind of like, but always having the question be like the forefront, as opposed to like we're gonna figure this out, or just going to ask the questions.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I am so glad you were here. I'm really, really so glad you were here, Jess. I hope you'll join us again. Yeah. Yeah. I sometimes think some of the attributes that we attribute to folks who are dealing with neurodivergent issues, and I don't mean just the way their brain works, but the issues of how do you navigate in the world, is because we've created systems that make no sense. So, you know, how do you navigate systems that make no sense is all of us. And then you add on top of that, oh, this is the way my brain happens to work. It's also massively not creative. You've got 10 minutes and here's the line, go from here to here. It's like, all right. John.
I think for me, the word opportunity keeps coming to mind. I think this is a great opportunity for each of the different parties we discuss. I think it's a great opportunity for creating the future to start to think a little bit beyond the horizon. I think it's a great opportunity for people out there who are promoting and subscribing to catalytic thinking and using it. And I do have it integrated into what I do. So it is kind of like part of, like I say, there's three things you're going to hear from John: the triple bottom line, catalytic thinking, and the empowerment dynamic, right? And you're going to hear that. Whatever I start, I'm going to open up with those three things, because I really think they give me a platform from which everything else we say kind of starts. And I think this really will empower more people to feel that way, feel comfortable with that. And then I think it's a great opportunity for our community, because I think this has come up a couple of times. The system itself is broken. And I think the worst thing you can do is like know that the system's not working and keep trying to make the system work. So I just think this is an opportunity to enact system change at the fabric level, because I think that's where it has to happen, at the fabric level.
I love that term too. It's very cool. Dimitri, let me give you the mic.
First of all, these summaries always spark my excitement and my memory. Just seeing how other people saw the process, the meeting, how they were affected by it. Angie, you were talking about clarity. And a transparency, basically, which is clarity, which deals with assumptions. And we all deal with assumptions about the work that we're doing or the work that somebody else is doing. You know, there was a lot of discussion today about shared values. Well, how do you know you share a value with somebody? Jessica, you were talking about not realizing that there is a framework out there. You know, in my mind, kind of combining both of those thoughts of there is a framework and we share values. And how do we do that? Well, one of the ways we do that is through transparency with each other and with, you know, what we're trying to do. So it's always really exciting at this point to just look at all of those things and see, because my mind's always, how do I fit stuff together? And that's always how my brain, my neurodivergent brain works, is how do I fit stuff together? That's what I'm taking away from this, is the fact that the more we work on this, the more transparent we are about it, the more potentially successful, i.e. change the world, we are able to impact.
Yeah. My reflection, I've got a couple of reflections. Like Dimitri, sometimes these conversations, these reflections at the end are my reflection. And Jess, I'm so glad you brought up the going out on a tangent and then coming back, the going out on a tangent and then coming back. That's going to be I never really thought about it in that way. It's just what feels right, I think, to so many people. And there are people to whom it does not feel good. They look at our meetings and they go, no. For us, this I tend to be very linear, and this still feels right. Because I also need to feel context. My compulsion is I need to see context. I can't just see two data points. They make no sense to me. I need to see the whole thing. And what we drew today was the whole thing. Okay, now I can see where things fit into that. So I really appreciate you bringing that up, just in terms of all of our brains work so differently, and we're all forced into a model that isn't very human. So I really, really so appreciate your reflection, Jess. So thank you, and I'm so glad you were here. I am really seeing the threads of what are the conditions that need to be in place that make this possible, that make all of this possible for all of the people that we talked about, and pulling together a process that is simple and elegant and very human-centered. So I'm looking forward to that, and we'll see you all next month, hopefully. And everybody have a really, really good month. Thank you guys so much.